Okay, so we're at part two.
I just want to confirm, did you say 16 cups from Rafa?
I said that we're not going to go by cups, because cups are not as precise. I said 5 pounds.
It has to be 5 pounds.
5 pounds for sure you can make a bracha. It could be with less, but certainly 5 pounds you can make a bracha. Less than
and
that, you should say.
And 3 to 5 is no bracha.
Right. I wanted to say even 2.5 or 8 cups. I said from eight cups until 5 pounds, you should take the challah without a bracha. 5 pounds and non.
You shouldn't make a bracha.
I don't know how much 16 cups is. It depends on how humid your where your flour is stored and things like that. Cups just aren't as precise. Some say 16 cups. It's probably close enough. The 5 is probably a chumra. Anyway, we're at part two. Unfortunately, for those who weren't here last time, there was a corruption of the file of part one, and part one no longer exists.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I know. Which is very unfortunate for both my wife and my mother who are planning on listening. But one person said I should just stay it over at home, which is not going to happen. But if at some point anybody wants to do it again, I'm happy to do it with people. I just don't like talking to machines. Okay, but we will start. So last week we really spoke a lot of the issues of Hafrashas Challah. And we had one question that remained that we weren't sure about the answer, so we'll pick up with that question. And then we'll move to a few other areas. The question that was left was, what happens if you're, again, assuming that 5 pounds of flour, if you use 5 pounds of flour or more in the dough, then you certainly have to take off challah and make a bracha. What happens if in the same day you're making 10 pounds of flour? You're doing a double load before Yontif, and you're going to be making 2 separate batches. Do you take challah one time with a bracha, or do you do it twice with a bracha? So this would depend on how you do it. If you're going to double it, and at some point the two doughs, or the challahs before they are baked, are going to be together, you know, out on the table, counter, wherever you're doing it, then you can take one challah on everything that's there, even if it's not touching each other, since each one has the right amount on its own to have the challah with a bracha. If you're going to, as somebody said last time, finish the entire recipe, including the baking, the first time, and then start again from scratch and make an entirely new dough after the first one was baked, then you would take challah a second time with a bracha, and you can say your Yehi Ratzons or whatever else you want to say, just don't be counted as one of the 40 people.
But then the only way to do it is if they're together. Like, what if you do them dough and then in the oven, and while the first one's in the oven, the second one's baking? Like, they're not totally separate.
If they're totally separate, then you can do it separate. But once they're all on the table or all together, basically, right, in the dough form, then it's not considered to be separate. Then you make separate brachos if it's 2 separate doughs. Okay. So that's really the end, I think, unless there are questions remaining in terms of the Hafrashas Challah. I want to talk about 2 other, I guess, major issues tonight that don't relate exactly to that, but do come up while baking. The second one is only second to the pet peeve about the no source for 40 women baking challah at the same time being a school for anything, is this next one, which is the following. What is the definition of bread? Anybody? What's bread?
Flour and yeast.
Flour and yeast, okay. Maybe flour and water. Something made from the 5 grains, so all's good. So when do you make hamotzi and when do you not make hamotzi? That's a little bit of a more technical question, right? Because we know that there's flour. I have my cookbook here. We have, not my cookbook, my wife's cookbook. She's probably delaying some recipes she wanted to make tonight, but she was very nice and gave it to me. We know that on a cake, it has flour and it has water, and the bracha that you make is mizonos. And yet, it has eggs, and yet on challah, as we have it, we make hamotzi. So what exactly is the difference between bread and cake? Maybe. So I'm going to read, everybody, a recipe, and we'll take a vote whether this is a cake recipe or if it's a bread recipe. You cheated? Naomi's not allowed to answer. Okay. A quarter cup dry yeast, 4 cups warm water, 2 cups and 1 tablespoon of sugar, 2 tablespoons of salt, 2 cups vegetable oil, 8 eggs, 5 pounds plus 2 cups of bread flour, 2 egg yolks, and 2 to 3 tablespoons of water. Anybody? Challah or cake?
Cake. Too much sugar.
Too much sugar. Anybody?
How much sugar was it?
It was sugar. 2 cups and 1 tablespoon of sugar. 8 eggs.
That's my recipe for challah.
Okay. The answer is both. On page 276 in this fine kosher palette 2, that is the recipe for delicious challah. On page 277, the recipe for kutkish cake is 2 softball-sized balls of challah dough from the previous page. Then you roll it out and you put chocolate in it. It was a trick question. That's why I took this cookbook. You see, the only difference between them is the picture. This one looks like a challah and this one looks like a babka. But that's really the question, is what exactly is the difference between the two? We know that...
Converse could be what constitutes McDonald's roll.
That's going to be, yeah. Well, in passing, I'll tell you my opinion on a Mizonos roll. We'll come across that.
Same opinion as the 40 women?
It's close. It's close. So that's the question. So that recipe can be used for a cake and it can be used for a bread. So which one is it? How do we know what bracha to make? So the answer is like this. Basically, the definition of bread is when you mix flour and water together and you make a dough out of it and you bake it. That halachically, basically, again, there might be other ingredients also, is the definition of bread. Mizonos, on which you make a bor, meaning mizonos, is referred to in the halacha as pas haba'a bekistin, bread which comes with a pocket. Meaning, we'll explain what that means in a second, but the definition of the mizonos, of the things of the cakes, in the definition is the same word, bread. It's just a different form of bread. So what transforms the bread from being a hamotzi into being a mizonos? So the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rishonim, explains that if it has one of 3 characteristics, that makes it into a mizonos, as opposed to a hamotzi. The first is that it's made from some sort of very sweetened dough. Like the case with a cake. You take a chocolate cake, or you take something which has a lot of, an awful lot of sugar, other ingredients, other spices, things like that that are infused into the dough itself, baked into the dough. So that's one, again, most pastries, cakes, things like that, once that stuff is included in the dough, so now we have a... Now we have a mizonos.
What does included in the dough mean? Incorporate.
Knead it in and bake together.
Okay.
The second possibility is what the name implies. Pas haba bekistin, bread that comes with a pocket, is something that is filled. So you put a cherries inside of a dough and you have yourself a cherry pie or a cherry Danish or something like that. You fill it with something sweet. We're going to leave aside for today, not just for now, meat and things like that. Deli rolls are a very interesting question. It's not for today. But you fill it with something sweet. You fill it with chocolate. You fill it with cinnamon. You fill it with fruit. You fill it with something sweet and you bake it with that sweet thing in it. Again, it's not necessarily mixed into the dough, you know, kneaded inside of it, but it's baked together. That is another way of turning a piece of what could have been bread, the same dough, which could have ended up being bread, and now you can transform that into a mizonos. And the third potential characteristic is something which is very hard or brittle, like a cracker or a pretzel. You can take the exact same dough and you make your pretzel or your cracker out of it. You make it into something which is brittle, and that transforms it from being a hamotzi into being a mizonos. I'm sorry? Well, croutons just depends if it started out as bread or not. If we're talking about things that are taking place during, while you're baking it. The question with croutons is that if you have already something which was baked as bread, and then you start doing with it, can you take away its status of bread? We're talking about the initial creation. The simple answer to that is probably not. But that's, croutons are also very complicated.
What about the challahs that they have now that are filled with
tar, for example, which is not sweet.
So we'll try to get there. I'm going to go after the cinnamon and the chocolate first, and then maybe we'll spread out to za'atar. What's the common denominator between these three things? Again, the three different characteristics which basically change the same dough that could have been hamotzi into a mazonos, which are either that the dough itself has been sweetened like a cake or a pastry, that it's like a cracker, something very brittle, or that it's filled with something sweet inside of it. Basically, the common denominator of all of them is that these are forms in which we eat things as snack, as opposed to eating it as the staple of the meal. Bread is something which is a staple of a meal. By doing any of these things, you've turned it into a snack. So since it's a snack, it doesn't have the same importance, and therefore on the chart of the brachos, it gets moved down, gets bumped down from being a hamotzi, which is the most important bracha, it gets bumped down to being a bore mine mizonos.
Raisin challah and chocolate chip challah, what is...
So we're going to do the extremes first, and then we'll see if we can try to get back to the middle cases. Those are going to be the harder cases. But let's get to the ones that seem, at least in my mind, to be a little bit more clear. So again, by doing these things, we've taken something which has the potential to be hamotzi, and we've transferred it out into a borei mine mizonos. So, now there's another important halacha to know. Maybe we'll skip it for now. Well, maybe we'll come back to it. Terrorists don't go through the desert. Okay. If we have all that and we come back to our, let's say, cinnamon challah or our rolled in chocolate and chocolate chips and whatever else you're putting inside, which again is the exact same recipe, thanks to this excellent cookbook over here, which is a perfect example. So if you have a challah that basically is the same thing as a cinnamon babka, the only difference is that it was braided, and it looks like a challah, as opposed to buying it in a rolled form, which is what the picture shows, where it would look like a typical babka, kutkish, something like that. So what bracha should we make on that? Anybody? Yeah.
If you can't distinguish it as challah or as cake, if it looks like a challah, shouldn't it be mostly?
What makes it look like a challah? Because of the braids?
No, like a lot of babkas in the rectangle tent, people make
right
in the rectangle tent also.
That could be, but one, none of the definitions that we had in the halacha were based on how it looks. Everything was based on the substance of the dough. The substance of the dough, again, if we had just knowing what we now know, which category would these challahs, which are basically the exact same thing as these babkas, other than the fact that they're braided, fit into? Mizonos. That's a problem. Right? If you buy one of these cinnamon challahs, that really is the exact same thing as, or you make them, as it's indistinguishable, other than the fact that it's braided, it's a borei mine mizonos, and it's not going to be hamotzi. Now, we'll try and explain a little bit maybe why there's a little bit of room to possibly justify such a thing, but it comes along with a big chumras. Okay, we'll try to... So I'm fine with saying that it's mizonos, and we'll leave it at that. But if we want it to be hamotzi, I'm just warning that it's going to come along with the chumrah. Fine. So this is how it goes. The halacha is that pasabal bekistin, all these snack forms of cake, since they have this close relationship to bread, if I use it as a staple of a meal, again, even though it's normally intended to be a snack, if I use it as a staple of a meal, I can transform it from being this snack food and a boring mine mizonos into being bread and being hamotzi lechem min haaretz. So how do I go about transforming it into a meal food? So according to most poskim, it basically goes by how much you eat. So if, let's say, you're driving in the car and you sit down and you have a bag of cookies, and by the time you get to wherever you're going, there are no more cookies left. You weren't necessarily planning on eating the entire bag of cookies, but there's a bag of cookies that was there, it was full, and now there's no longer any cookies in the bag. know, something must have happened to these cookies. So if the amount of cookies in the bag is the equivalent of the amount of food that you would normally eat in a meal, then you would then have to bench on those cookies, because you've turned the snack food, which was, again, this only works for something which fits into one of these categories. There are other types of mizonos, like pasta, which is mizonos for other reasons. But again, something which fits into one of these three criterion of being this the brittle, the sweet, or the filled. If I use it as a meal food, then it transforms it into a meal. And if I know in advance that I'm going to do that, I would wash and make, say, anatiyah tadaim and hamotzi on my cookies. Again, if I know that I'm going to eat that many. If you don't know, then you make a boring name of Zonos, and then when you discover you ate it, you have to bench, because that has nothing to do with what you did at the beginning.
Is that why some people for Shalosu don't have cake?
So that's one of the reasons. Is that the reason? One of the reasons that you might say it's okay is because it's sort of like a low level of bread. That might be one justification for that. I'm not suggesting it, but that might be a justification for it. Now, how much is the amount that you would eat of cake in order to qualify as a meal? So there are different shiurim that are given, but the one which again is, I guess, been most widely accepted today is that what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says is that we look at how much we normally eat during the biggest meal of the day. And in America, the biggest meal of the day presumably is dinner. Most people, I think, don't really eat dinner, breakfast, or lunch. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. People are running. You don't have time to sit down for a normal meal. But dinner, you sit down. So the amount, again, you have to try and figure out how much you would normally eat for a dinner. And if you eat that amount of this mizono stuff, then you would then have to wash if you know you're doing it in advance. And if you don't, then you would just have to bench. However, the Magen Avraham says that it's all the food that you eat during the same sitting combines towards the amount of the meal. Meaning, even if I sit down to eat a little bit of cake, and I'm going to eat along with that, you know, cholent and potato kugel and herring and fruit, whatever else I have, we look at the sum total of all the, there's a very often, once a week, there's a time when we do that. Right? That's basically what a kiddush is. Right? So, if I'm going to eat all that food, then we look at the total amount of food that you would normally eat in the biggest meal, and we see if you ate that amount of food total, and only even one kezayis of this pasta, baba, kistin stuff, of this mizono stuff, then it becomes a meal, and you have to wash, and you have to bench. So according to...
Washed
on the mizonos. And you would have to bench after eating that. Which means that if you would assume like this, Rav Moshe, that many, many people who go to a Kiddush on Shabbos have a very serious Hilchos Brachos question of what to say at the end of the... Because you're going to eat a mizonos because you made Kiddush, and for Kiddush Melkam Suda, in order for the Kiddush to qualify as a good Kiddush to allow you to eat, you have to eat mizonos, and you're supposed to eat at least a kezayis of mizonos. If you then go around and you eat as much food as would normally qualify for a meal, which plenty of people in this room have done, not in this room, I'm saying in this larger social hall room, I've seen it accomplished, then according to Rav Moshe, you would then have to bench. Now, if you would assume like Rav Moshe, then maybe you can justify using these challahs at the beginning of the meal also, because even if the challah, this chocolate chip, chocolate babka, cinnamon, whatever challah that you're using at the beginning of the meal, even if it's really mizonos, if I'm using it for my bread and I'm going to, throughout the meal, end up eating enough food for the entire meal, so then I would still be able to wash on that and bench at the end of the meal. Mm-hmm. But if you assume like the Rav Moshe, then you have to be very careful when you go to the Kiddush. That's the Chumrah. Mm-hmm. You can't have it both ways. If you're going to assume that it's good enough for your Shabbos meal, that you could take a challah that should be mizonos and eat one slice of it, and you're going to make hamotzi on that, and you're going to bench because you're going to include all of the other food that you're going to eat during the meal, then you'd have to do the same thing when you're at a kiddush or when you're at a smorgasbord or other times when we eat a lot of, we consume large amounts of food, and we have maybe a little bit of mezonos. As long as you have a kezayis of mezonos, you're then going to have to bench.
But if the kiddush, you're making kiddush. At a shmur, you're not making any kiddush. You don't have to have.
You don't have, right? Correct. The shmur, you can get away without the mezonos. But if you walk around to the only I think it applies more to chassan's tish because they put out this cheap cake that you're going the sponge cakes and things like that. So people eat that. At the chassan's tish you are, because they give you like a little bit of real food and then they give you all this cake.
Okay.
So you end up eating the cake and then
one.
Right, and then with the real food you don't have this problem as much because there's not as much, correct, because there's not as much mizono, so you don't have to eat the mizono, so you can get out of it. So that's the potential justification to do this, but again it comes along with the chumra, they have to be very careful what you do with the kiddush. But the truth is that it's still a big, it's still a leniency to rely on this, because again, not all the posts can necessarily agree with this Rav Moshe. And there's also a machlokas in the poskim, what foods come along with your mizonos. What if it's things that would never get eaten together with this mizonos? You never put your chalent on top of your cake, I think. Right, you wouldn't put those two things together, so what do they have to do with each other? So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you're right, only things which would potentially be eaten together with the cake would be included. Rav Moshe says, no. So you're entering into a realm which is fraught with machlokas and requires several leniencies in order to be able to use these challahs for hamotzi. So I don't know if it's necessarily the wisest thing to do. And more, and also, when you're eating it Sunday morning, the leftovers, it's certainly mizonos. The leftovers of your chocolate chip kakish challah thing, cinnamon challah. So even if the reason you made hamotzi on Shabbos was because you did it as part of this big meal and you're relying on Rav Moshe and you're relying on everybody else that would allow it, if you're just going to snack on it afterwards, you certainly wouldn't make hamotzi on it because it's not bread, it's cake.
We haven't yet laid down the rules about what we're talking about here.
Anything which fits into these three categories. So again, something which, again, if it wasn't in this, if you went to a restaurant and they were bringing out some bread to eat along with your meal and they gave you a piece of this gooey cinnamon stuff, you would probably send it back and say, I didn't ask for dessert yet. Right? Happens to be that on Shabbos, since we have challah, so I guess we try to be creative and I don't know, maybe because we don't view it as part of the meal. I don't know what the logic of why we do it is. I think it's a nice for dessert. You can serve it for dessert. Maybe the best time to serve it is for dessert. But
the value of what you're filling with determines if it's considered bread or cake. For instance, I don't weigh my challah typically, well, typically we do whole parts. So if I use a little bit of cinnamon and sugar versus cooking that, I would use that with making, let's say.
The determination, it's hard to give exact amounts. The determination in the end is going to be, is this something which you would, if somebody would walk into your house and not know that it was challah, would they assume that, again, besides the way that it looks, but meaning that this type of food item, would it be something that, you know, they would want to put their tuna fish on and make a sandwich out of, or is it something that they would eat along with their dessert with a cup of coffee? Yeah, that's maybe one way of trying to look at it.
So
when it comes to spices, like this is atar and stuff like that, it really depends on how it be used. Sometimes we do spice bread a lot, and they sell spice bread in a restaurant. You would get a bread like that, so then you could say that it's bread, and that's different than sweetening it, because that would be a normal way to eat bread. If it's something which, again, is transforming it from what would be bread into something which would be more of a snack, then it would be a question. And raisins, so it depends. If you only put, again, if you don't put so many raisins in, then you probably would make a sandwich out of, I think. No?
So by the criteria you're using, the rolls on airlines that it says they're mizonos aren't.
Correct.
So there's also say mizonos rolls.
Mizonos rolls is an oxymoron. They cannot exist.
Like, I know it says a lot of packages that...
Right. So what are they raising?
I can tell you that, so the in Eretz Yisrael, in America, in Eretz Yisrael, they use apple juice in all the pizza. I went into, I don't know what it's called anymore, it was in that Bell Tower Mall by near Yafo and King George. It was an Angel's pizza store, I don't know if it's still there, downstairs. And I went there once and I ordered pizza and I asked the man, where do you wash? And he says, you don't wash because it's made with apple juice, it's mizonos. And I said, okay, where do you wash? And he said, I don't have a sink. You can't wash. I said, well, we can discuss the halachic issues later, but where do you wash? And eventually outside somewhere, I found the sink to go wash, and he was yelling at me. I
first one to come in there and ask that question.
Apparently.
It's not
brittle and hard, but it's probably it's a meal. It's a meal food. No. Pizza is a meal food. It's very. Rav Moshe has Rav Moshe has a tshuva.
Well, eat it as a snack. Sometimes I would eat it.
If you would really eat it as a snack, then there's what to talk about. The fact that a pizza store is usually filled much more lunchtime and dinner time as opposed to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, give us a little bit of a hint that most people view it as a meal food and not as a snack food. In my house, my kids know that if you take a bite of pizza, you have to wash because pizza is bread. And that even though in school they tell them that it's mazonos, that's not what we do at home. I'm not sure if that's in this school. And then in the previous school, I remember it being an issue. But again, I don't want to get into everything that has to do with Passover Kitzen. It's a very broad topic. But yes, I would assume that pizza is because it's a meal food. It's not a snack food. But these other things that we're trying to, by braiding it, turning it into a meal food, it's hard to see why that should work. Grass is a different story. It depends what they're made out of. It depends what they're made out of. Some of them are corn, and then it's definitely not hamotzi. If they're not, they're... Whole wheat wraps are probably hamotzi, even though they're also, they'll yell at you and tell you that it's really mazonos. At least in my experience.
But then you could use the same idea of it being a meal.
Right. I think it might be anyway. I'm not sure which category it fits into regardless. Because it's filled afterward. It's not filled before, and it's just a flat piece of bread. It's like a pizza.
Yeah,
like
a sandwich.
Right.
Like the lunch.
So again, it really just depends on if it would be something which is perceived as a snack food or as a meal food.
No.
Probably might depend on the person. Yes.
Can I go back to the sweet challah for a minute?
I think we're still there. You don't have to go back.
Well, on Shabbos, you use lots of mishnas. Would it be best to have one regular challah and one...
That's an interesting question. There's a question that the post can talk about. What if you need lacha mishnah and all you have is a challah and a babka? So you're better off using one challah, or so you stick the babka next to the challah, because if you would use it as for your meal, then it really has the same status as a loaf of bread. So I think the post can assume that you should put the second the babka or the cake next to the challah in terms of having a second bread for a lacha mishnah. Your question is, which one are you going to cut?
But can you use it as your challah?
You probably shouldn't use it as your challah. Do you need to cut both? I don't think so. I did wonder about that earlier today. If you're going to use the chocolate chip challah, is there any point in putting the real challah, whatever, the other challah, the hamotzi challah, using that for the second one? I would assume not. If you think that this is for what's for your meal, then I think it should work. I thought of a different explanation today. I don't know that it's correct as to maybe how we could suggest why it could be hamotzi again and not have to get involved in all the entire machlokas with Rav Moshe and all those details. That maybe if you're using it as your bread for the suds of Shabbos, and since the meal on Shabbos requires bread, by definition, the fact that you're using this as your bread for Shabbos automatically turns it into bread, at least for Shabbos, and even if you wouldn't have the right amounts of food. And the reason that maybe we could say something like that is true is because of what the Sfardim do. The Sfardim, again, it's a big kasha, it's a question on the Ashkenazim. We make hamotzi on matzah. The matzah should be the cracker. What's the difference between matzah and a cracker? So we try to justify that matzah, for whatever reason, traditionally is used as a meal food. So even though it technically fits into the category of a cracker, it's the type of cracker that we have decided is often associated with meals, therefore that turns it into a meal food. The Svardim make mizonos on it, except on Pesach they make hamotzi on it. So I didn't understand that. So maybe that's the same kind of idea. That the same way they understand that on Pesach, since by definition that's your bread for Pesach, that turns it into a motzi. So my thought, maybe you have to say the same thing here as well. That if you're going to use these challahs as your challah, even though it's I think it's mezonos. If you're going to use it as your challah for the meal, and the meal of Shabbos requires making a real seuda, maybe that could transform it without getting involved in the other issues into bread. My recommendation would still be not to, but maybe that's at least a justification.
If you only have boxes in your house, you have no challah, you could use that as hamotzi.
You could use it for lechem mishna. I'm not sure if you'd say hamotzi or not.
Why
it depends
not?
How you're using it.
You could wash on a bag of cookies.
If you're planning on eating the entire bag.
So we'll eat the whole babka.
You can eat the whole babka, that's fine.
For Shabbos, you're saying.
For Shabbos, yeah.
If you're going to do it, I would eat a lot of it.
Not a problem.
Okay, fine. I don't have that problem either, but if you're going to do it, I would do a lot of it. Yes?
So wait, if you know
I'm sorry, it's a little confusing.
I think I'm there, but if you know you're going to eat the whole bag of cookies, then you wash and you say hamotzi, or you wash and you say
mezonos? If it's the amount of, that would be the equivalent of a meal, and you're sitting down and you're eating the whole thing, enough to wash, you would also say hamotzi. If you've transformed it into a meal food of bread. I don't think it normally happens. I mean, it doesn't happen that frequently. I think I did it once. I think there was one time when I was learning in Israel, and the food was particularly bad, and my mother had just sent a pan of brownies. And I think I decided for one of the meals to sit down and eat 3/4 of the pan of brownies. And I washed and I benched on the brownies. And the brownies were good.
If you're eating one piece of pizza or less as a snack.
As a snack?
Mm-hmm.
If you would normally. If that's something that you would eat as a snack, then Rav Moshe says that you'd make the mezonos. Which says you make them use theirs.
Will not do hamotzi if they only eat one piece. They decide in advance whether they.
That's what Moshe. Moshe has this one piece, two pieces. I'm not here to disagree with him, but many other posts can have. So, and that's the again. My Rebbeim have always understood that way. That pizza basically is pizza is basically bread, and it's a meal food. It could be the opposite is true of the. I don't really want to get too involved in it, but the opposite might be true of the soft pretzels. The soft pretzels really are basically bread, but since you normally, if it's normally eaten as a snack, I don't eat them ever, but if they're normally eaten as a snack, by the way, they sell them at football games, I don't know. It's a good snack. So if it's a good...
And what's the deal with pasta?
Pasta is a completely different category. You can eat pasta from today till tomorrow, you'll never have to bench. Because pasta is boiled. That's basically what it comes down to. It's not baked.
Bagels
are boiled and baked. They're both. The soft pretzel thing, again, if what we're saying is correct, then what should come out is that the soft pretzels, even though they really don't fit into any of our definitions of being mezonos, because they're not brittle, they're not filled, and they're not particularly sweet, it really should be hamotzi. But if it's something that you would normally eat as a snack, then perhaps you could say that it is that it's mezonos and not hamotzi. If you're eating it as a meal, then it would certainly be hamotzi. Yes?
But that definition, if you're eating pretzel and hummus as your lunch, you should wash on that.
If you're going to be eating an entire meal's worth of pretzel and hummus.
That's your meal. That's going to be your lunch.
Yeah, my meal.
If you're eating the pretzels, I don't want to get this far off topic. Okay, if you're eating the pretzels basically as a substitute for bread because you don't want to wash,
no,
then you'd probably have to wash. Meaning it's the same thing as the mezonos roll. Right?
Yeah.
The purpose of the mezonos roll that you get on the airplane is that you should have something which will fill you up exactly as a roll should without having to wash. That's the idea behind it. So inherently that's flawed. How can you have such a thing?
Pretzels or crackers with hummus, you should, if that's your
you have to eat a lot of it. I don't want to, again, it depends also. You'd have to eat a lot of it. You'd have to eat, again, probably the same amount of total food, the same amount of pretzels as the total amount of food that you would normally eat for dinner, not for lunch. Again, because since in America, the larger meal is dinner and not lunch, most people eat less for lunch than they do for dinner. And the definition of kviya suda might not be what you eat during lunch. That's why I didn't want to go there. I kind of took us into a Hilchos Brachos area because of the pet peeve that I have about these scholars. So I didn't really want to do the entire issue of the Hilchos Brachos.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I know. So which part should I call it? Clarify. I'm happy to clarify. Okay, the point that I was trying to make is this. In terms of the definition, bread and cake are not very far removed from one another, as the Kosher Palate Volume 2 has proven to us. Right? It's the exact same recipe to make the babka. And again, you're not going to do anything about the dough. All you're doing is, I don't really know exactly, something about rolling it thin and rolling it in chocolate or cinnamon or something, and then rolling it up and putting it in versus braiding it. So if I take my challah dough from page 275, or 276, whichever was the page on the left, and I then make it into the braids, and I take the braids and I roll each of the braids in cinnamon, sugar, I don't know, looks from there, you probably put some margarine also, and then I braid it together, then in no way is that different, other than the shape, from what exists on the next page when it tells you to do exactly those instructions, but to roll it up as opposed to braiding it. So why should one be hamotzi and one be mizonos? That was the question. What do you mean you're diluting the dough in something else?
When you're making challah, you're making just the challah. When you're adding this chocolate or this filler, you are changing the essence.
Good. Right. Exactly.
So
that's my point. Right. So, but there's no difference. But no, that's exactly the point. But so there's no difference in how you shape it. Once you've changed it in this fundamental way, and again, we tried to define there are three fundamental ways in which halachically you can change it from being bread to being what we'll call, for lack of a better term, cake. Right? Bread and cake. Cake being the mizonos, and bread being the hamotzi. So we said there are three factors that you can do to change it from one from being bread to being just the flour and the dough to being the cake, which is either that it's brittle, that it's filled, or that something in the dough itself sweetens it, like a cake batter or something like that. So once you're doing that, you've transformed it into a mizonos. All I was saying is that what's the common denominator between those three things, between those three characteristics, is basically those are things that make it into a snack as opposed to being a meal food. Right? If you just want to try and understand what the common denominator, why were these three things chosen as opposed to, taking the bread and throwing it against the ceiling 10 times, that turns it into mizonos. The reason is because these three things change it from being bread into being, from being a meal food into being a snack food. So something which is a meal food is hamotzi, something which is a snack food is mizonos. My point, the only point which was important for us, I was trying to give a justification. Without the justification, my main point is just that if we take our challah and we make it in a way which qualifies it as a snack food because it fits into one of these three categories, and the only reason that we're calling it bread is because we happen to braid it, there's really no justification to saying that that should be hamotzi as opposed to being mizonos just because we decided to serve it at the beginning of our Shabbos meal after Kiddush and make it into 6 braids. There's nothing, again, if we look at it, if we ask somebody an outsider's perspective without looking at the shape, you know, is this something which you would normally eat as part of a meal, or is this something which you would eat as a dessert food? I think most people would say that if they had this chocolate chip, or again, depending how much is in it, this chocolate chip, the cinnamon, whatever, challah, that they wouldn't make their tuna fish sandwich out of that, but they would eat it after their tuna fish sandwich for dessert. So once you've done that, you've transformed it into a mizonos, and therefore it probably should not be used as your bread. That was the main thrust. Afterwards, I tried to give a little bit of a justification that for those who do it, it could be that since when you eat enough of these snack foods, you transform it, if you eat above a certain amount, into a meal food, so then if you're using it as the main staple of your meal, maybe, again, even though it's mizonos, and even though if you were eating it 2 hours after the meal as a snack, you would make a bar mitzvah mizonos, maybe we could still justify, if somebody really, really, really wanted to do it, maybe we could justify making hamotzi on it by saying that since you're using it as the staple of your meal, you are transforming it for now into a meal food as opposed to a snack food. That's the summary of what I was trying to say.
The pizza is hamotzi because pizza is just known as a meal.
Well, pizza, might not even fit into any of these categories. It might not be exactly the same thing as something which is filled with fruit or something like that, because it's filled with cheese, something which is more filling. B, it's something which is normally used as a meal food and not as a snack food. Again, if somebody's using it differently, maybe that would be different. But again, normally it's used as a meal food, not as a snack food, and therefore I would assume that it is hamotzi. We're good? We now have the easy topic of using one oven. Okay, we'll try to make that as clear as possible. Okay. So most people have two ovens, and that's the way to go. Have two ovens. I don't have two ovens. But if you can, you should have a milchik and a fleishik oven, and your life will be much easier. But for those who only have one oven, or on yontif or something like that, are stuck using one oven, what are the issues that come up in trying to use one oven? Again, there's a tremendous amount of background that's necessary to understand this, and we're going to try to give as little of it as possible just to try and get to the point that we need to understand. There are two main halachic issues when using one oven. One is what's called reicha, the reyach, what we'll call the aroma of the food. That Chazal understood that the aroma of the food has the same quality as the food itself. And therefore, if you cook two foods simultaneously, the aroma from one food will go into the other, and it's akin to the foods actually mixing. So if you would cook, again, we'll get into the details soon, but if you would cook, you know, milchiks and fleishiks together in one oven, so then there would be a mixture of the aromas of one to the other, and that would be a problem. That's one issue. That's the issue of the aromas. The second issue is what's referred to as zeya. Zeya referring to steam or vapor, something which is, again, like a liquid, Zeya ayin, like sweat. The sweat of the food. So when it comes to the zeya, so there the zeya of the food, the steam that comes from the food, can actually penetrate the walls of the oven the same way when we cook in a pot, so the food can get into the, halachically can get into the walls. The zeya can penetrate the walls. So if you have something fleishig cooking in your oven, the meat can then get absorbed into the wall. And then we have to be possibly afraid that it's going to come back out into the next thing that you're cooking. Those are the two issues that we are dealing with. So that we have two different issues that we have to then deal with, which is one question is cooking foods together at the same time, and then we'll talk about cooking foods one after another. If we're talking about cooking foods together at the same time, so then we have a very serious problem. That's this problem of the aroma of one food going into the other. So one cannot cook milchiks and fleishiks in the same oven at the same time. We assume the aroma from one goes into the other, and that, again, at least the chassid, if you actually did it, we can talk and it might not be a problem, but you should not do it. However, if the food is covered, then the aroma has no way to get in. So therefore you can warm up in the oven simultaneously covered meat and milk in the same...
Only one.
You can cook it also, whatever you want to do. I don't know. If you
put it in the same oven?
If both are completely covered, you can put it in the same oven.
It's warm.
You don't have to double wrap.
What's the difference between warming and cooking? No, cooking. You can cook it.
Not double wrap?
Double wrapping is not a halachic thing. But double wrapping is important. Double wrapping is to ensure that nothing breaks through wrapping number one. That's the only double wrapping. Yeah, that's all double wrapping is. There's no such thing in any Shulchan Aruch of double wrapping. All double wrapping is a way of making sure that if we're going to potentially running in, like you're warming up something in a trafe oven, so we have very serious problems if anything, you know, bumps into the foil and cuts through the foil. Therefore, we say so put two layers of foil to make sure that nothing, or there's a less of a chance of something cutting through the foil. But in terms of the ability of aroma or steam to penetrate into a food, it can't get through one layer of foil either. There's no difference between one wrap and two wraps.
But both things need to be covered?
So the truth is probably only if your oven is one of the types, then I don't see why that one has to be covered. That one could be
oven on,
let's say your oven is fleishik. So if you have the fleishik thing uncovered and the milchik one is covered, so I don't see why that would be a problem.
Really?
That, I don't know, you disagree? We're not talking about parv. We're not going to talk about parv today. I can't. I couldn't. I can't even get done with the babka. I do. Parv is an important shear, and it's another shear, and I'm happy to do it at a different time, but parv is just...
You're not in microwaves now either, right?
I'm not going to touch microwaves, no. I could try to... Yes.
So then the brownie is not part that besides the brownie is then not considered meat. If the chicken's covered and the brownie's open, that brownie.
And it's in a meat oven?
It's in a meat oven.
So then that's the parv question. It's no worse off because it's in the oven with the chicken that's covered.
Okay, right.
We'll leave it at that. What the status is when you normally bake the brownies in the plastic oven, I don't want to talk about.
Really?
What? I just don't want to talk about it today. We can talk about it a different time.
Assuming it was 24 hours ago, that's the last time I was going to
Well, by the end of this, you're going to have at least four ovens. Don't worry. No, this is a kula. No, I think this is true. Again, if somebody knows differently, I'm happy to hear.
The brownies are in the oven with a covered chicken, then it's as if the chicken's not in the oven.
Right. I think so. If it's covered, how's anything going to get out of the chicken? But wait, this means that you can't like open it up to peek either.
Right.
You can't open it at all.
The door is open. Yeah. The oven,
it's, no, you have to take it out.
One oven, then you don't have a meat oven, and you don't have a dairy oven.
We'll talk about that. How do you know you don't? We're going to have to get to that. Maybe you should have one.
Can you have those brownies with a cup of chicken with a cup of coffee with milk?
Yes, that's the question.
I really don't want to talk about it.
Wait, you said yes, because it's as if the chicken wasn't in the oven.
So I didn't say what the halacha is in that case. You're saying that. If you want to say that, good.
I'm saying you can.
Naomi says you can.
It's not even part. The first time I've used the oven, the oven's nothing right now.
Yes,
chicken in a brownie. What would be the status of the brownie?
Stick it in your coffee with your milk, but cream cheese on it, whatever you want.
If we guarantee the oven with part of it,
yes.
Still
have,
okay.
I just don't want to talk about the power of now.
Tell me how the oven got.
Fine. Good. You kashered your oven right before you started. Fine. Fine. Okay. Now, but what's important is that that's issue number one of the aromas. The aroma is going to be an issue only when you have both things in the oven at the same time. Mm-hmm. However, that is an important point. If there is residue, splatters, dirt, something like that from one of your things in your oven, then it's as if that thing is in your oven. So, that, and then the aroma problem would still exist if you're cooking the other thing. So if, assuming for now, which we'll talk about in depth later, assume that you have a parv oven, but there's you have a fleishik oven, and there's a splattering of meat juice in your oven, and you're cooking your milchiks uncovered, then it's the same thing as if you were cooking the meat itself uncovered together with the milchiks uncovered, and it is a problem. Now, what you should do, we only have one oven, we'll talk about it in a second. My only point is that this issue of the aroma being a factor only when you're cooking at the same time is true even if you only have residue left of one of the foods. Then it's as if that food is in the oven right now together with the other thing that you're making. So keep your ovens clean. But fine. That's...
Or cover your food.
Okay, so that's the other... The other issue is Rav Shechter assumes, which is important, he assumes that the aroma does last for a little while afterwards. Meaning it doesn't disappear. If your oven was just filled with this chicken aroma, and you take it out, so I think if you stuck... I don't want to stick your head in the hot oven, but if you did, you'd probably still smell some of the chicken for a few minutes afterwards. So he normally says that you should wait for the oven to cool down before assuming that the aroma is not there anymore. The only time that presents a problem is on Yontif when your oven might not cool down because you're leaving your oven on straight. Presumably, I didn't have a chance to ask him, but presumably if you wait a certain amount of time, again, our ovens are vented, it's going to come out at some point. So whether it's a half, how long you should wait, I don't know exactly. But if you wait a while, so it's not there, and you can presume it's not there anymore, then you wouldn't have to worry about that anymore. So that's the issue of cooking milchiks and fleishiks together at the same time. But again, so that we're probably not doing as frequently. The question is, if you only have one oven, and you want to cook things one after another, how do you go about doing it? So here the issue is the other question, again, because there's no aroma issue, because that's only when the food is in the oven. The question is this question of the zeya. Is the things that have been absorbed into the walls, do we have to be afraid that those things are going to come out or not. There are many, many differences in opinion, again, ranging from that the Zeya doesn't go into our ovens nowadays because our ovens are very big, to the other is on the opposite end of the spectrum, that there's absolutely nothing you can do, and if you don't have two ovens, you have to always cook everything covered. Those are the extreme opinions, which do exist in very legitimate poskim. But we're going to try to go down the middle of the road. Okay? So first we need to define a few terms. First we need to differentiate between cooking and baking. Right? Cooking and baking are not the same thing. Cooking is when you prepare food in a liquid. Right? There's water, there's sauce, there's something which the food is cooking in, and the liquid is going to be present both at the beginning and at the end. Right? If you pour a sauce on meat, and you cook the meat in the sauce, the sauce is going to be there at the beginning, and it's still going to be there at the end. Maybe a little bit less, a little bit more, depending on if it's covered or uncovered, I think. Whatever. There's going to be a different amount of sauce, but there's still going to be sauce left, so that is considered to be cooking. Baking is preparing food without liquid, or if it's going to start with liquid, but the liquid is going to be absorbed by the end of the cooking process. Okay? So that's cooking, and that's baking. And the reason that's going to be important is because when we're dealing with this Zeya issue, cooking and baking are going to be very different. Because the Zeya comes from the liquid. The Zeya comes from the liquid and it doesn't come from the solid. So if you have a, let's say you have a fleishik oven, again, what we're going to see is, if you only have one oven, you should try to define the oven as one thing. You should pick one thing. I think most people probably cook more fleishik in their oven than milchik. You probably would pick to make your oven fleishik. And then the question just becomes, how are we going to cook milchik things? And then a different time, maybe parv. How are you going to cook those things in this fleishik oven? So now, if you have this fleishik oven and you're coming to bake something, you can bake something in the oven even if it is uncovered, even if it is milchik. Because even though the Zeya got into the walls of the oven, in order for the Zeya to come back out, it requires Zeya to get it out. So it needs to be that the food that you're cooking is going to produce the steam that can pull what's previously been swallowed into the walls out and into your food. When you're baking and there's no liquid, then there's nothing to pull it out into your food.
You start with liquid.
Right. Let's talk about when you start with some liquid.
Let's say a cheesecake.
Let's not talk about cheesecake. Maybe we'll talk about cheesecake then. I don't want to talk. Let's talk about lasagna. Lasagna's good.
Okay, yeah.
Let's talk about lasagna. If you have the lasagna, so again,
it doesn't start as liquid. The cheese
but there's liquid in it to start. But fine, so it doesn't have liquid. But the point is that you can make the lasagna in your fleishik oven. Again, if your oven is clean. Because if it's not clean, then it's the aroma problem. But if your oven is clean, right? If your oven is clean and it's a fleishik oven, you can make your lasagna because that's baking. It's not liquid. That's baking. That's not cooking, even if it is uncovered.
What constitutes clean?
Yeah, right.
Clean?
If you make it over 24 hours,
is it clean as for Pesach?
Not for Pesach.
Or is it
clean as a white?
Let's say that it's clean that it that,
that you don't it requ- see lot
of if you don't see it, it's definitely clean. If it requires a terrible amount of scrubbing, then that's probably clean also, because what's there isn't really it's deeper in. If it's completely burnt, that's probably also not going to be there anymore. Well, you have a nice one of those, those fresh splatters that's still smelling up the house. You know the type. You have one of those, so it's still there. But if your oven is basically, or there are some ovens that are just, I've never seen this in my house, but you might have seen this somewhere where the oven is so completely filthy that you can't believe there's probably a piece of meatloaf stuck in the wall of the oven. Yeah. Again, if it's normally clean, then we can assume that the oven is clean. So if that's true, then you can bake your dry things in the oven, even if it's going to be uncovered. If you're coming to make something which is...
Why again?
Which is why?
Because why?
Because in order to get the zeya to come back out, you need to have zeya. And the liquid is going to produce the zeya. But Moshe writes, if you know that you're cooking something which is a solid, and for some reason you know, you've seen it producing a tremendous amount of steam inside, so then you lose. You can't rely on this anymore. But the general assumption in halacha is that when you're baking, there isn't the steam coming out. If you cover something and then you uncover it, even if it was dry, then the steam will come out because it's been trapped inside.
So lasagna, generally you cover most of it, and then at the end you open it.
So if that's how you make the lasagna, and you're going to open it suddenly, you should probably open it outside of the oven and then put it back in.
Okay.
I think if it's really going to steam it, the oven. Again, there are poskim that are not worried about the zeya at all. Rav Shechter happens to be that he's one of them. So if you mess it up, it's definitely not the end of the world, but you should try to be careful. No? Okay, fine. Fair enough. So again, if you're cooking if you have a meat oven, so then if you're cooking something which has liquid, then it should be covered. If you're cooking something which is solid, then it it can be uncovered. I'm not sure about
solid.
I'm saying lasagna is considered to be. I'm saying that basically the definition of liquid and solid is going to say is what we're going to call it as pourable. If it's something which can pour, it's a liquid. If it's something which cannot, then it is a solid. I'm not talking about Hilchos Shabbos in terms of bishul or ein bishlach habishul. I'm just talking about this one halacha.
It's like a cake. You make a batter. You pour it.
Right.
Would that be cake?
That's why I don't.
Not chocolate chip cake.
A chocolate cake.
A chocolate cake.
That's pariv.
Yeah.
You could make
it dairy. The assumption is the simple understanding is that that's considered to be baking also. I saw somebody today who wanted to suggest differently, which is why I didn't want to go there because I didn't have a chance to look into it in detail. But I don't see why it should be the case. The biggest proof that it's considered to be baking is you bake a cake. You know, you don't cook a cake. Has anybody cooked a cake? You bake a cake. No? I think.
Yeah.
You turn it to bake. You don't cook a cake. You bake a cake. The simple understanding is that it would be this. As long as in the end it's not going to have the liquid, that would still be considered to be baking, unless somebody does an experiment and determines otherwise. Like Moshe says, that presumably would be the case.
Are we talking about
ovens.
No, are we talking about putting it in with something that
no
meat in it?
No.
You want to put a cheesecake in it.
In your plastic oven.
Okay, fine. Nothing else is in it, though.
Nothing else is in it.
Okay, fine.
So again, the simplest thing to do is if you only have one oven, then step one is designate your oven as either meat or dairy. If your oven currently is neither, then it might be worth koshering your oven, which can be done easily through self-cleaning, and can be done, if not, by cleaning it out very well and turning it up to the highest temperature and letting it run for about an hour. I'm not going to talk about that works for Pesach or not, but for our purposes now, that will be good enough. Yes? I think any of them. Anything which gets there basically above 700-800 degrees, which I think is all of them. I think whether it's the speed, the max, or the regular, that's what we have on our oven, then I don't think it makes a difference. Any of the self-cleaning cycles is going to be enough to get the temperature high enough. If you can't do self-cleaning, then you could do broil for, whatever the highest is, you could do broil for an hour. So again, so you designate the oven as one or the other, and then the designated one, so if you both say we'll designate our oven as fleishik, so you can cook the fleishik thing however you want. It can be covered, it can be uncovered, you have a full reign. When it comes to the other, the off type, which in this case would be the milchitz, so then if it's something which is dry, then you can even cook it without a cover. If it's something which is wet, assuming there's no edible or major residue in your oven, then there's something which is wet would have to be cooked covered. If you want, the other way to do it is to kosher your oven in between. it's best to wait 24 hours between using it. But if you can't, then it could be that there's what to rely on there as well. Again, there are poskim who assume that you can always, that the zayah doesn't come out. But I think this is really the middle approach, which isn't too difficult. But if you only have one oven, I think this is the way to go. It's good. I really don't want to talk about parv, so we're gonna. If you have to use an oven which is not kosher, then you should double wrap. Even though it's not halachic, double wrap. In all these other cases, you can single wrap. Everything I've talking about covered, there's just one layer of wrapping is enough.
What if you hear somewhere you're heating up your food not kosher, right? They bring it back to you. Not both wrappings, but the outer wrapper was ripped.
It's still sealed, but the outer wrapping was ripped. I mean, whatever seal was there. We're not worried that they switched the food. We're just worried about whether it was open or not. Then it would be fine. It would be fine. As long as you could see that it was closed. And yeah, again, the double wrapping is more beforehand to try to make sure nothing is going to go wrong. But once nothing happened, so we should be okay. Yeah.
Can I bring this up? I don't want...
You can bring anything up. I just might not answer.
Microwave. Is it really more kind of the same status as the oven?
No, the microwave is more complicated. The microwave is more complicated for several reasons. So first of all, the walls of the microwave are actually a little bit better. The walls of the microwave don't get hot. The food gets hot in the microwave. The walls don't get hot. The way the microwave works is the microwave heats up the moisture inside of the food. But because that's the case, there is a lot of steam which is produced in a microwave also. That's one side of the equation. The walls of the microwave are plastic. Plastic, according to many, may not be able to be koshered. There's also a glass, according to many. There's a glass tray under it, which for sure can't be koshered. If you want to assume that you can...
It doesn't get either milk or fish.
When it's hot, it's not 100% clear what happens to glass. If you're not going to cover things, the microwave should be the same thing.
Microwave has glass on the
side. Right, that's better. But again, every microwave is going to produce steam from the food. So what you should do with the microwave is also with the microwave, if you want to keep something uncovered, is you should designate the microwave as one thing, and that thing can be heated up no matter what. And then the off one, the milk or whatever it is, should be covered. In a microwave, it might even be worth double covering, because microwaves do tend, especially plastic wrap, which you probably shouldn't be putting in the microwave because they say it causes cancer. I don't really know these things. That's beyond my...
You don't have to like put a glass of water and boil it in between dairy and kosher it?
You could, if you assume that would work to kosher it. That's
why would that kosher it?
Because that would be the steam. It would pull it out with the steam. That probably wouldn't help for the glass. It might not help for the glass. The best thing to do with the glass would probably be to cover the glass, if you wanted to kosher it. There are many poskim who assume you can kosher a microwave.
And if you cover it with those microwave covers,
but if you're gonna,
then that doesn't count then, right? Because all these microwave covers have little tiny holes.
Right. I'm not sure what comes out, how much comes out of those holes. I'm not sure. If it's not really significant, then it probably doesn't matter if there are holes. Because again, if it's being basically the moisture is being blocked by the cover, and that's not really what it's not going straight up through the holes, then I don't know that the holes should matter. Glass when it's hot, we're more careful about. The glass isn't clear. Again, Pesach might be different. There are poskim who assume that you can kosher the microwave. I think the general way they say to kosher the microwave is to wait 24 hours, because here you definitely would have to wait 24 hours. You're not burning it. Maybe by the oven, you could say that it's libun, maybe you don't have to wait 24 hours. But if you're doing Hagalah, if you're taking it out through the water, through the steam, you do have to wait 24 hours. You'd wait 24 hours, you would put a cup of water in a glass inside to make it go until it steams. And then if you want to assume that it's even going to kosher the glass, then move it to a different spot so that it could then kosher the glass as well, if you assume that would work.
What if you have a flagship microwave and you want to boil water in it and then use that water to drink coffee?
I don't want to talk about parv today.
Your water is parv.
I know. That's the parv. That's exactly what the parv question is. You take something which is neither, you cook it in one type and you use it in the other. That's the classic parv question. But you know, it's a very important question. It just there's just a lot of factors that are we can take a vote. We can do parv. The truth is, I can raise it now. I was approached on Sunday by a yeshiva what they're trying to do is they're trying to sort of design curriculum that they hope that Rabbanim will use to facilitate teaching different topics in their communities. And they prepared it on several, and they have like a booklet which comes along with it, which explains things and guides. So they were trying to convince me to teach the course, what they called it, on it's the comprehensive guide to the kosher kitchen, everything you could possibly want to know about the kosher kitchen, from koshering ovens, challah, everything we've talked about, and much, much more. In 24 parts, and as they put it, you even get a certificate at the end. They thought that was very appealing. I wasn't sure if that maybe that does work. If there's interest in doing such a thing, then I don't know, somehow magically in my schedule, maybe we can find time. I'm happy to do it, but I'm just not. It's a just fairly large commitment of time. So if that type of thing, that I quickly skimmed what they want to show me, and it's very, very comprehensive and really touches on all these issues, plastics and microwaves and really any other issue that comes up in the kitchen. They have one on the Shabbos kitchen as well.
What is it here?
Wherever I want it to be. Yeah. Yeah, no, they're in Eretz Yisrael. They're just designing these things and they want to sort of No, the point of the whole thing is that they want the Rabbanim who are giving it to ultimately make the decisions on anything that's a machlokas. I mean, they'll point out that there are these different opinions, and they want whoever is guiding it to be able to come to conclusions. So we can talk about that a different time as well. But, okay, that's basically the main issues that I wanted to talk about. So if there are any questions left, we could talk more. Yes.
So frustrated.
No frustrations.
Okay, so let's say I have my top oven.
Let's say you're making cinnamon challah in your milk oven.
Why am I having to eat one dough? I'm making challah, but I'm putting it in my milk oven. So now, is one challah considered?
That's the power of questions.
The power of questions. 24 hours.